This is the podcast for April 6, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the money fight at the OK Corral, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
And you're not allowed to say Happy Good Friday, even though it's got the word good in it.
This is very sad.
Everyone has a sad today for the death of Jesus, and then the resurrection takes place Sunday, and that's why Easter is a happy day. So,
oh,
there's a little theology for you.
Oh, I'm wondering where all the peeps fit in, but
they fit in your mouth. That's where they fit.
Here, stuff your face. Jesus rose. Have a marshmallow. What?
Yeah.
It's light and fluffy and airy like Jesus.
Oh, man.
And white like everyone knows Jesus.
Yeah, white. Right.
Blue-eyed white man living
English
in Italy.
Speaking. Welcome to the Sacrilegious Professional Podcast. Well, it is Blog Against Theocracy Weekend.
It is.
It's on one level, it's incredibly easy this year to blog against theocracy because the presidential campaign has made it easy to do.
It's so damn in your face.
It's so in your face. But at the same time, I feel as though my blogging feet are in cement blocks because it's not about theocracy anymore. We've just pared it down to power. It's about power. Power over women, power over poor people, power. And we will use God talk to make the dog voters salivate.
Yeah.
But it's not about that anymore. We've gone full Lee Atwater on this. Actually, Lee Atwater was quoted in a really good article about Trayvon Martin over at Gawker.
Yeah.
I linked this and I sent it to you.
Yep.
You know, where at the end of his life, Lee Atwater said, you know, back in the early 60s, we said N-word, 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 and got white voters all riled up.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it wasn't cool to say that anymore. And so we just said food stamps or welfare or rights. Somehow we got rights in there.
Hmm.
And this
welfare queen.
Welfare queen. And so, but that's exactly what's happened with theocracy. It used to be Christian nation, Christian values. We want to have a Christian nation. And now.
That's a white Christian nation.
And now it's just. It's about how many weeks. It becomes weeks of gestation.
Mm-hmm.
And we get into this really technical conversation about gestation and insurance coverage and so forth. And it's all just dog whistles for we are going to control reproduction for everyone.
Well, you have to.
Yeah.
If you want – this is the specific kind of theocracy we're talking about. And I hate to get all grand unifying theory on you, but
well, it is.
Lee Atwater talking about how we needed to change our marketing language to make racism more acceptable in the public sphere, while still signaling to our bigoted base that wink, wink, we're all on the same side, right? This is the marketing. This is what. George Wallace taught Nixon, and Nixon taught Atwater, and Atwater taught Reagan, and this is how Reagan became president. This is how he won. He went to the South and talked about welfare queens and strapping young bucks and their T-bone steaks and their welfare checks, and everybody goddamn well knew what he was talking about. And I don't care if he's personally a racist or not. I really don't care. It doesn't really matter. If you're out there lobbing Molotov cocktails, I don't care if you're a member of the volunteer fire department on your off hours. You're still burning the place down. You're still morally responsible for what you've done. But when you understand, as I know you do, Blue Gal, but when you understand that that's the racial component to the theocracy, but wrapped up in all of that, ever since the very beginning, if you go back and read Jefferson Davis's speeches. If you go back and read Alexander Stevens' cornerstone speech, I know I've mentioned it several times before.
Yeah.
You go back and read Mark Twain talking about suddenly a lot of the racism, a lot of that made racism acceptable was coming from the pulpit. And you realize that it's always been about power, but it's always been about power that people feel righteous in exercising because God wants it that way. It's not them being whimsical. they happen to be on top of the social pyramid. But if you trace racism back to its American roots, this is where conservatives who come from other cultures or countries or out of academia completely fall apart, because they don't recognize that American conservatism, the conservatism of America, is designed to not conserve the British system or some fantasy that Edmund Burke had, but it's always been designed to preserve to conserve a very specific worldview and a very specific economic, moral, and religious point of view that all has to do with the fact that God wants white Christian men to have dominion over the earth, and everyone else is subordinate to them and needs to shut the fuck up and do what they're told. And you can trace an absolutely straight line from that justification for slavery. The vice president of the Confederacy said that that God blesses our institution, that slavery is a great institution. It is a Christian institution, and it is God's will. You can trace that line all the way through Lee Atwater, all the way through Lubbock versus Virginia, all the way through Jim Crow, and all the way to the 2012 presidential campaign. Because the theology that they're deploying is this exactly the same theology of we must control what our women do. We must control who they marry, who they breed with, what sort of babies they have. We must control the bodies of our women to make sure our race is pure, to make sure that nobody gets out of the social order that we have designated. People who are sleeping around and doing whatever they want, we can't call them what we want to call them, so we'll call them welfare queens, or we'll call them sluts. But what you really mean is the white male patriarchy is being challenged, and that is absolutely unacceptable to the southern white slave owner mind, which is at the root of all of this shit. Anyway.
Yeah, and it's as if it doesn't even have to make any sense anymore to anyone else, because it's about power. I was looking at this Arizona bill that hasn't passed, so let's not get too excited.
Right.
But there is an Arizona bill that would declare pregnancy 2 weeks before conception.
Yeah.
So the minute a woman is no longer having her period, she is presumed pregnant. And this is really, I've gotten very depressed reading Margaret Atwood this week, because it's such a real ugly story about what happens to women when they're just treated as wombs. Uh-huh. And one of the things that's interesting about The Handmaid's Tale is the real enemy in all of this, and what flows through the narrative, is not someone's going to come and kill this woman who's the narrator of the story, but that she will kill herself. And everything is set up. The setting of the story, the rooms in which she walks, are all set up so that there is nothing in that room from which she can hang herself.
Uh-huh.
Very depressing, dark story.
Yeah.
But it is about treating women as breeders rather than as human beings. And when you do that, you are dehumanizing them.
Well,
and that's just fine with certain people in the Arizona State Senate, because it allows them to start talking about weeks. They can, instead of a 20-week limit for abortion, all of a sudden it's an 18-week, and then you're not able to see whether through an ultrasound at 18 weeks whether your baby has a brain or not, whether your baby can breathe outside the womb or not. All of these things that parents, men and women, gather information to determine whether this pregnancy is viable, whether this child will live when they're born. Mm-hmm. Not whether they're handicapped, whether they'll live or not. There are some situations where the fetus will kill the mother.
Yes.
And you are it is now about weeks, and it is now about depriving parents of that information to maintain power and to make women breeders and to dehumanize them.
Well, to make them into property.
Yep. Which is
slavery is
doing. And it's
turning people into property is the definition of slavery. It is making women into the
chattel.
Property of the state.
Chattel. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for a particular economic purpose.
Yep.
And for the advancement of a particular ideology. And that's a language we don't use anymore because, as we've learned, well, I'm not reluctant to use it, but as we learned in the Trayvon Martin case, anytime you point to a lynching and call it a lynching, the right is going to go apeshit mm-hmm. and say, no, you're the racist. You're the racist. Yeah. You're race baiting. And that is exactly the conversation we will have when we start pointing out that what you're doing is sanctioning the enslavement of women mm-hmm. for their reproductive organs. And that's the conversation I'd be delighted to have at a national level, but we're never going
to
have it.
And you said something to me in the kitchen yesterday about that, that once – if they turn that around and realize that that's not true, mm-hmm. that the other side is not the racists talking.
Yeah.
If they don't flip it around and try to make – no, you're the racist.
Yeah.
Then they have to admit who they are.
Yeah. Now, I'm lifting this quote from somebody. I don't know who. Probably James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. But something about once they're deprived of their hatred, there's nothing left but pain.
That was it. Yep. And the guy who left the voicemail for the New York Times reporter that was full of the N-word.
Charles Blow.
Yeah, he published.
And we joked. I know that that's – oh, Skull Rebel's dad has been heard from. That's very inside blogger joke.
Yes,
but that kind of, you know, that kind of casual hatred, that kind of and
Charles Blow reprinted or actually broadcast that voicemail to point out to people younger than you and I, uh-huh. hey, these people still exist, just so you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You in know? Very large numbers.
Yeah.
And in lots of places, they swing elections.
Yep.
And in lots of places, if you want to win the election, you have to get these people to like you and vote for you, which is why Ronald Reagan had to run around the South talking about welfare queens.
States' rights, yep.
And young bucks and their T-bone steaks, because that is the only way that you're going to get these the lost battalion of the Confederate Army to vote for you. And if this country had a different past, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But this – This is the – and I'm certainly not the first person to say it. I'm probably the millionth person to say it. This is America's original sin.
Yep. Racism.
And we are still living with it. And the people who want to pretend that it's either not true or want to profit by it, who want to make a pact with the devil and say, we're not going to try to get rid of this or marginalize it or make it go away or put it in remission. We're going to feed it and cultivate it and grow it and turn it into a political party called the GOP. Well, now the devil has come for his due.
Well, but what I want to ask you about this has to do with the absurdity of declaring pregnancy before the woman has had sex.
Yeah.
You know, and the person that brought this to my attention is one of our listeners who said, is this time travel or or is it immaculate conception? What are they after? And I wanted to ask you, in relation to this, okay, we're fighting against this absurd bill.
Uh-huh.
On a much larger scale this week, 12 states' attorneys general, and you say attorneys general.
Yes, you do. You said correctly. Way to go, blue gal.
12 states' attorneys general have written a letter requesting that there be a constitutional amendment against Citizens United. They've sent a letter to Congress to get the ball rolling on this. Uh-huh. And I think about this and think, wow, this is where the line has been drawn, is that we have to fight against corporate citizenship, corporate peoplehood, and against immaculate conception in the law, written into the law.
Yeah.
And so we are not fighting for income equality. We are not fighting for schools. We are not fighting for health care. We are not we are being scattered. Our energies are being besieged.
Uh-huh.
And this seems very conscious to me.
Well, you start enough fires.
Yeah.
Eventually you crash the system.
Yeah.
And it's easy. If all you're doing I have two things to say about that. First is a little bit science fiction-y. Everybody take a little bit of drink. And it was probably Bill Gibson, William Gibson, the guy who wrote Neuromancer and Count Zero and Burning Chrome and a bunch of other cool cyberpunk novels in the Philip K. Dick genre. He was the one who said, either he or Spider Robinson. See, this is me just getting way too geeky. But once said, you know,
someone will write in correcting you to tell you who it was.
I'm not the biggest geek in the universe, as you know. There are way bigger geeks than me out there.
And they listen to this show, and we're very grateful to them. Believe me, we love you guys.
Oh, we do. And it's the riffing that we can do back and forth on this, that moving from subject to subject in a coherent way, that this actually – there is someone out there who wrote something that actually adds to the conversation in a genre that you might not ever have considered. It's something I think I can contribute to the conversation.
Right, right.
Because the author, I think it was Gibson, said something like, if aliens visited the Earth and looked for the most advanced life form on Earth, they would probably choose a Japanese kairetsu, the mafia, or the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because they endure. They endure over time. The Catholic Church survives and survives and survives. Scandal after scandal, disaster after disaster, the fall of Rome. They survive everything because they are a corporate organism. And what we are witnessing, I really do believe on a certain level this is absolutely true. We are witnessing not an alien invasion, but we're witnessing a new life form, very much like Homo erectus fighting against the Neanderthals. We're witnessing a new method of organic organization fighting against us, trying to take over the system. And that system is corporations.
Well, and I was going to say that I feel as though I'm fighting for the Enlightenment against the Dark Ages.
Absolutely.
And the Dark Ages is very much alive, very much a thing. And the push and pull is between those. Which way are we going to go? Are we going to go toward science? Are we going to go toward learning? Are we going to go toward health? Or are we going to go against all of those things?
And our nature, human nature over the arc of history, I really believe, moves forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we slide back really hard.
Well, and I don't want this to be a cynical podcast ever.
No.
I want to continue to fight this fight because it's worth it. And not say, oh, everything sucks and everything. You know, we get emails like that every once in a while. Yeah.
Go read A Canticle for Leibowitz, William Miller novel about the post-nuclear Catholic Church putting civilization back together again and the rise and fall of civilization. I think that the great sweep of history sweeps us ever forward. But I think that I think this is an evolutionary battle. I think more complex, better organized organisms always displace less organized. Mm-hmm. So the obligation of us who want to be humane is to organize better.
Yeah.
And the second weapon that's falling on us now like bow and arrows that on a culture that never even heard of a bow and arrow before or like gunpowder is money.
Yep.
The thing that makes it possible for all of these battles to be waged simultaneously across multiple fronts to the point where we're all exhausted. You know, we're fighting, as you said, we're fighting unions over here, union battles over here, and human rights battles and reproductive battles, and we're relitigating contraception? Really? Really? We're going to fight about that too? And it just goes on and on and on. And you look behind, trace all of those battles back, and you'll find a crackpot wingnut billionaire or corporation willing to spend an infinite amount of money to keep the battle going and willing to throw people into a generation after generation until they fucking win.
And this segues very naturally into our second topic, away from theocracy a little bit, to budgets and to the media.
Yeah.
And both President Obama and Mr. Romney gave speeches to the Associated Press this week about the budget, and the president used the word Trojan horse. Uh-huh. And was very honest.
Speaking of contraception,
about
Trojans.
Trojans. But he was very honest about this is math. You know, this is you're not going to cut taxes for people that make $1 million every year, not people that have $1 million, but people who will make $1 million this year and $1 million the next year and $1 million the next year, and you're giving them $146,000 a year in tax cuts in your budget.
Right.
And cutting programs for the poor. That's just not a logical thing to do.
Yes.
And Paul Ryan, he has – I said on my blog this week, his MO is propose outrageous cuts for poor people and tax cuts for billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for the president to call him out on it and say this is not reasonable or rational, and come back and say the president's being mean to me. He's dividing America.
Oh yeah.
And as Rick Klein said, you know, Paul Ryan didn't say the president got me wrong. The president got my numbers wrong. The president got my motives wrong, because he didn't.
Right.
He was just mean and dividing America.
Well, and you and I have seen this. Every liberal listening to this, yeah, and anybody who's followed the press, has heard this same stupid, but highly effective strategy run over and over again.
Yeah.
We heard it all the way through. This is the Rush Limbaugh strategy.
Yep.
Say something, you know, nakedly racist.
Mm-hmm.
Someone calls you out for saying something nakedly racist, and you attack them for misunderstanding, or you're just an entertainer, or
oh,
didn't
Ann
mean
Coulter.
It, or you're the real racist.
Ann Coulter. Oh, you can't take a joke. You're so humorless. You're so this, that, and the other. And she's gotten what she wants, which is attention. And her name,
right.
I mean, I just said her name, which I shouldn't do anymore. But
uh-huh.
But it is, it's a method of operation. Absolutely. Every time.
And you can apply that. And the entire Bush administration ran this way.
Yep.
As the Iraq War, as their disastrous foreign policy failures were falling apart around their ears, and as the right-wing blogosphere and right-wing columnists and people like Bill Kristol and David Brooks were desperately trying to patch the hull of this thing,
mm-hmm,
they stopped attacking liberals like us for being liars and wrong and traitors. But they started attacking us for being vituperative and shrill.
Yeah.
It was our tone of voice that was unacceptable. David Broder just crapped himself when he discovered these liberals out there in the blogosphere would say mean things about people he liked.
Vituperative, foul-mouthed bloggers of the left.
Yeah,
untrue.
No.
And not liars, not getting the facts wrong.
I can't attack your facts because your facts are right. And your facts clearly demonstrate that I was either a tool or a co-conspirator in this latest disaster.
Yeah, but you're mean and nasty and use swear words.
Well, and like I said, we tried calm and rational and compromisey, and it was called the 90s.
Yeah.
Remember how that turned out? We got Bill Clinton impeached. We got him crippled as a president. We got him impeached, and we ended up with George Bush being put in the White House by the Supreme Court decision.
Yes.
Compromise works when the other side is reasonable. The other side in this country is no longer rational or reasonable. They are animals, and they need to be dealt with that way. And when they become rational and reasonable, I will stop saying fuck every other sentence. But until then, the only way anybody got anybody's attention – anybody
screaming.
Broke through the right-wing lies that were coming out of the Bush administration by the carload, by the job lot. The only way anybody got any attention was by standing up and screaming back at them as loud as they could. Those people were called crazy, shrill, marginal, fringe, loony, lefties, anti-American, socialist, cheese-eating surrender monkeys. And they were right.
And they're still right.
And every time they start attacking tone and word choice, I know we're winning.
Yep. That's it. Remember, every time Paul Ryan says divide America, an angel gets its wings.
Yes. A liberal angel.
Liberal angel gets its wings. And we want to talk about you mentioned David Broder and co-conspirator.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure we get this in about the media. And telling the truth. First of all, Joe Scarborough, who always gets in trouble when he talks to what's his name? I was going so
Mark,
well.
Mark Halperin.
Mark Halperin. Every time he talks to Mark Halperin, he gets in trouble
because
they're shooting the shit, and they forget that other people are listening to them.
It's Beavis and Butthead.
It really is Beavis and Butthead.
Well, the left, you know, what about the right? Oh, they're a bunch of fuckers.
Yeah, no, and it is just that bad. And he got into it with Halperin about, oh, well, don't even talk to me about but the Republicans, because everybody knows, everyone I've talked to off the record knows that Romney's going to lose in November.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, Halperin really looked like he was holding back a turd at that point. Like,
Don't say that. Don't say that.
You know, my
that.
Job for the next 6 months depends upon me saying, but the Democrats. Yeah. But the Democrats did this, and it's both sides. And, you know, this is good news for Romney. I have to say that every show I go on because I'm Mark Halperin. Mm-hmm. And so,
well, and I have to say that by saying some people I have spoken to off the record.
Yeah.
You know, it's always this privileged communication that I can't really tell you about.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Secretly, there's some secret people out there who think Romney's not so bad. Maybe he has a chance. And then we get into a process discussion instead of a policy discussion, which is what the whole game is about.
Speaking of unnamed sources, this new book by booklet, this new ebook by two authors from the Politico, Evan Thomas.
Yeah. Republico.
Republico.
Yeah.
Hold on a minute. I'm pulling it up on my Kindle, darling, because that's the only place you can read it. My little black and white Kindle here.
You know, outside of a Kindle,
oh brother! Playbook 2012 Inside the Circus. It's called. And I've only just gotten started with it, but there are two cover-ups from the media in the first five pages of this book. And I know that's why they wrote, you know, that's why they wrote it that way, so that you'd
jump
right
in.
You and I would talk about it.
Open cover-ups.
Really?
But
here we go. Everyone's talking about the un-Romney. The most popular candidate was the un-Romney in the early primaries. Virtually, I'm reading from this Politico, Republico ebook. Virtually every Republican hopeful had his or her moment. Handsome and down-home, Rick Perry had once seemed a natural champion for the Tea Party pitchfork populism that prevailed in American politics on the eve of the primaries. But some knew better. In September, a close ally of Perry's, again, there's that unnamed person, right, had remarked to a friend that if Perry were smart and if they had a couple months to prepare, then they'd have a shot. The man added, but he ain't and we don't. Now, here's the bombshell that everyone's talking about. A bad back doomed any chance Perry stood to break through. It became an open secret that he was using painkillers in sufficient dosages to keep him standing through the two-hour debates. The manager of a rival campaign was at a urinal in an empty bathroom in Hanover, New Hampshire, before the Bloomberg News debate on October 11th, when he heard someone come through the door loudly singing, "I've been working on the railroad." Perry came down the row of about 20 urinals and stood companionably close to the aide. Nonplussed, the campaign manager, made a hasty exit. As the bathroom door closed, he could hear Perry still merrily singing away, "I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day." Asked about the episode, a top campaign official said, "He whistles. I wouldn't read anything into it."
Yeah.
All right.
He's
so
high. He was high.
Then,
all that time. He was high.
That's why he couldn't remember the third,
cabinet
department he wanted to eliminate.
See?
Yeah, see,
you're
I'm high.
High.
Right I'm high.
You're
see,
high
I'm high.
Too, aren't you?
I'm so high on painkillers, right.
Yeah.
No. So then later on in the book, we start talking about Romney kept running behind candidates who had less experience and credibility. The most unlikely challenger in retrospect was Herman Cain. The Herminator was a crowd pleaser, but he was also a walking time bomb of scandal. Over breakfast with us in late February, a high-level Washington lobbyist, again unnamed, just shook his head over Cain's giddy run in October and November. Hundreds of people, he said, had known about the sexual harassment allegations against Cain at the National Restaurant Association. How had the press been so slow to catch on? Was it because they were lazy, or maybe just enjoying the Herman Cain show too much to check him out? Hello? Maybe they were profiting too much from the Herman Cain show.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's what Rachel Maddow said. Like, this is performance art. This is not a presidential campaign. He's making money off of this. He now has money to kill rabbits and goldfish on these very weird YouTube ads that, you know, it's a racket and it's a show.
And Newt Gingrich is, you know,
still a candidate.
Suddenly turned into a presidential campaign.
And Wonka today said he's now a magician. Everything he touches turns bankrupt.
But he'll be back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He'll be back. Note, I have made a lot of incorrect political predictions this year because, honestly, I really did believe and still believe the GOP is so face down in the shallow end of the gene pool right now.
Yeah.
That either the huckster or the theocrat or the con man or the Mormon could win.
Yeah.
The crazy, you know, the loony lady from Minnesota could have won.
She could be the vice presidential candidate with no problem.
With half of Romney's money, with a quarter of Romney's money, Rick Santorum could win.
If you don't think that Michelle Bachmann could be the running mate for Romney,
you don't
understand the media.
Yeah,
I mean,
and everybody knows it.
The media is the Etch-a-Sketch.
Oh yeah,
they're the ones that just shake. Oh no, we're gonna start over. Michelle Bachmann, you know, she'll win the evangelical vote. So yeah, she's the perfect candidate. She'll get the women vote and the evangelical vote. So
and
off to the races. And everybody knows, apparently, according to Joe Scarborough, that Romney's going to lose in November. So he might as well put Bachmann on the ticket.
Well, and again, I made a lot of bad political predictions this year because I sincerely do believe that if money had been factored out of the equation, and that was my big mistake. I always underestimate how incredibly powerful having a shitload of money is. It is the deciding factor. Yeah, it makes the world go round. As Danny DeVito said, you know, that's why they call it money.
Everybody wants it's money. That's why they call it money.
I chalked it up to my OCD. You know, I chalk it up to the fact that I perceive of things a little more technocratically, and it doesn't occur to me that there's this other factor out there other than what's good or what's right or what's logical or what's rational called a big sack of cash that will bury everything else. But you factor money out, any one of these people could have won because that's how bereft of a soul the GOP has become. However, I will predict flat-footedly without reservation that the minute Newt Gingrich drops out of the race, he will be David Gregory's next guest on Beat the Press. Yes. And his rehabilitation
mark
tour.
Mark his words. Yeah, because
his rehabilitation tour will begin because one of the
he'll be on Bob Schieffer. He'll be on Bob Schieffer, and he'll be on David Gregory's show. Absolutely.
And because this circus has a ringmaster, and the ringmaster for television is David Gregory.
Yep. And money.
Whose show is an absolute toilet for neoconservative centrist hacks to come and circle jerk each other and talk about how wise they are. They are the problem. That right there, that intersection of money, influence, insiderism, and a real scorn for telling the American public what's really going on.
Well, and journalistic ethics, which are no longer exist apparently, because the people from Politico can write all of this unnamed stuff after the fact, after Rick Perry's out, talk about how he's a drug addict from unnamed sources, and nobody goes back and says, no, why didn't you tell us this in October and November?
Remember that I have my grand unifying theory of everything.
Yeah.
And if you want to go read what I think about it, I wrote a post this week called 1972.
Yeah. Oh, you should talk about this because this is really interesting. What you read the 1972 Democratic platform from beginning to end.
And I shook the Etch-a-Sketch and said, all right, let's take centrism and centrist arguments seriously. Their contention is that the only place to be in the political spectrum that's reasonable is dead center between the right and the left, because the right has tacked – they can't get away from the fact that the right has tacked way into Crazyville over the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I would argue 40 years and longer. But let's just say over a stretch of time, the right has gone crazy-ass right. The only way you could justify being a centrist, watching as you watch the right disappear into the infrared light of bircherism and outright racism.
Well, and into the area where a woman is pregnant 2 weeks before she has sex. Yeah.
You cannot watch them get medieval and still be a centrist without positing that the left must therefore have also tacked so far to the left that it balances out. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you go back, and that's simply demonstrably untrue. This is the one I'm just going to stick to. I don't care if Charlie Pierce starts writing about it or not. I'm still going to write about it. Even if he's a better writer than I am, or just as good. And even if he has a magazine and I don't. The big lie of American politics and journalism that makes all the other little lies possible is centrism.
Yep.
Is the fantasy that both sides do it. That is the snake oil medicine that David Gregory and all of his douchebags sell on television every goddamn week.
But the Democrats. And this is the ultimate but the Democrats argument that you're making.
It is.
That let's look at the Democratic Party at its most liberal, which is McGovern.
Which is McGovern.
Yeah.
Let's all agree that the Democratic Party, after it got trounced by Nixon in 72, had swept pretty much out of their midst the people that wouldn't seat the Mississippi Freedom Party, the people – Daley was not beating hippies in the streets in 72. The liberals took over. Mm-hmm. And look at their platform. Just look at what they ran on, what was their platform. And you'll find in their union protection,
women's
wage,
rights.
Women's rights, birth control, family planning is actually mentioned in the platform, but it's not a radical document. It says – you know, you should have the right to work. We should have free enterprise is a good thing. Entrepreneurship is a good thing. But the poor and minorities and women, et cetera, you have the right to be different. You have the right to legal protection when people try to destroy you. And I wrote a long-ass post. I just read the actual document the party ran on in 1972. Then you look at the person who beat him, who was on the right, Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, who Hunter Thompson famously called, you know, just had to, he was so twisted, his aides had to screw him into his pants every morning.
Yeah.
Richard Nixon, who Hunter Thompson 30 years later said, look, compared to these fascists, he said, referring to the Bush administration, Nixon was a flaming liberal.
Yeah. Nixon was in favor of the EPA. He was in favor of a milk program for school children. And I read this week. It blew my mind. Out of four of the Supreme Court justices that Nixon put on the Supreme Court voted for choice and privacy in Roe v. Wade.
Yep. Yep.
75% of the judges that Nixon put on the court.
Yep.
Voted for Nixon. Women's right to privacy in Roe v. Wade. Voted for Nixon, abortion rights.
Nixon pulled America out of a war.
Yep.
Nixon.
We never thought we'd miss Nixon, did we?
Yeah. No. Hell no. And Nixon was a corrupt, crooked monster and really came within a hair's breadth.
And
destroying the U.S. Constitution. Yep. Really, really. My mom tells me she was expecting tanks to roll in the streets because he was subverting the Supreme Court. He was doing all the terrible, fascist, awful, paranoid things. And he was going to China.
Yeah.
And he was opening up to communist Russia. And he was... he instituted wage price controls, which is outright socialism. There's no nuancing that.
Nope.
And on and on and on and on and on. So he was not a liberal by any stretch of the imagination. And he,
But compared to the Tea Party, they would not elect – they would boo Nixon. They would boo Nixon. Yep.
So on your little chart, put the McGovern on the left and Nixon on the right and just draw a line
as to where the Republican Party is today and where the Democratic Party is today, which is to the right.
Way you can possibly justify being a fucking centrist when you look at where the right has gone the last 30 years and the left has gone the last 30 years. There simply is no intellectual honesty there. And the thing is, all the people sitting around the table at Meet the Press fucking well know it.
Yep.
That's why they will not allow a liberal on the show. Because 5 minutes with these people, I could make them look like idiots. Anybody could. Break out this chart. Say, look, here's where they started. Here's where they ended. Show me how centrism is an honest argument. Now, what it is you don't want to take any responsibility for backing these right-wing fuckers for the last 20 years, for letting them off the hook, for letting them get away with shit. And the only way you don't get duck-walked out of the building and thrown out of the media forever for being a lying hack is by pretending that the left is just as bad.
Yep.
And that's it, period. And I wrote a nice long post about it, and there's an opportunity for fundraising at the end of it if you'd like. But it's over on my site. And really, that's the big lie. The big lie that covers up all little lies. So when I see a particular aspect of that live show up, like Gloria Borger talking about both sides with healthcare.
Yeah.
Or He Who Shall Not Be Named Until After Lent talks about the Ryan budget. Again, they're simply inventing a completely fictional left-hand side to every argument that doesn't exist. Yeah. And then positioning themselves as a reasonable person who decries the – and it appeals to lazy people and ignorant people and, frankly, expatriate conservatives who don't want to believe that the left has been right all along, who can't afford it, that thought is too terrifying to them, and they won't permit it. And the halfway house into that world that lets them talk about problems without admitting they were wrong is, well, the left was wrong too. Well, you know, the left was wrong too.
And I want to end today with talking about just how evil letting them get away with it is, because there is a conspiracy against government health care, against helping people who need it.
Uh-huh.
And there's a blog called Third and State, which is a Pennsylvania blog, and Pennsylvania's primary is coming up. And I think Santorum is going to lose because my parents live in Pennsylvania. A lot of Pennsylvanians know what a crook he is. So I'm going to be really interested to see what happens there. But this Pennsylvania blog talks about – this is all on the same post. And I just – it's the day's news in Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. I just want to quickly go through these three news items that are all in the same post for April 3rd.
Sure.
The Philadelphia Daily News profiles a pacemaker-dependent child who was kicked off of Medicaid in Pennsylvania. 89,000 poor Pennsylvania kids have been slashed from Medicaid. The governor, who's, you know, a Tea Party governor, has laid down the law and said parents of kids on Medicaid need to fill out a form every 6 months to prove that they still need Medicaid. And if they don't fill out the form, they're off the rolls. Boom. And this mother goes to the pediatrician, finds out she's been kicked off the rolls. She was never mailed a form, or she never received a form in the mail. And her kid needs a pacemaker to have a heartbeat.
Uh-huh.
You know, we talk about abortion stopping a beating heart. What about this asshole Tea Party governor who's decided to kick children off of health insurance? And the 30-year-old mother said, look, it is written in stone that he's covered. He is not qualified for Medicaid based on his family's income. He qualifies for Medicaid based on the fact that he has a fucking pacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
And his heart will not beat without a pacemaker. Her son is 2 years old. And I just want that to sink in for a minute.
Uh-huh.
You're kicking a 2-year-old with a pacemaker off of health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
She said she'd not received the renewal paperwork and she was told she would have to reapply. Now, there was an outrage about this. And she did get it fixed. But this is happening to 89,000 children in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm ready to throw up. I mean, I'm just shaking here from this.
The moment the child's head crowns,
it's not my responsibility anymore. Right.
You move from an absolute, mandatory, hardcore, conservative Christian worldview where every effort, every resource will be spent to force you to have that child, mm-hmm. whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, whether it will live or not, whether it will kill you or not. By invoking the Bible and to protect that little baby, we're going to force you to do that. The minute that child's head crowns, all those good Christian become dog-eat-dog, libertarian, my way or the highway, fuck you, I got mine, Randites. And if you can't survive in their world, then we have two places for you. Three, the military, prison, or the grave.
Yep. And you know, the fact is I don't believe – that the majority of Republican boots on the ground believe that in their hearts. If you met them face to face over a coffee in the coffee shop, they wouldn't say, oh, that child shouldn't have a pacemaker.
And I have, and they don't.
And they don't.
They really don't.
But their governors, the people they are electing, are doing
absolutely.
This. And this is why we need This is why national health care is a Commerce Clause issue.
Yes.
Because if I cross over from Illinois into Iowa and have a car crash and don't have health insurance, Iowa picks up the tab for that.
Yep. You sure do.
So it and this is why we cannot trust the state of Pennsylvania to cover children. We cannot trust the state of Mississippi to cover black people. We cannot trust these states with their balanced budget amendments and their Tea Party governors to do the right thing, because they won't. And so that's part one of this one page on this blog. Part two is religious leaders in the state capital of Harrisburg have detailed the difficulty they will face in helping elderly citizens obtain photo ID so they can vote in the election. This is the same page. Religious leaders are trying to help the poor, racial minorities, and the elderly vote this year. And these religious leaders are saying, look, the new voter ID laws, which of course have passed, right, in the post-2010 Tea Party world,
yep,
they're going to prevent old people from voting. And we can't get birth certificates for them. It takes forever. And it costs them money, and they don't have it, and it's going to prevent the elderly from voting.
And my answer to you, Blue Gals, la, la, la,
yeah.
La, la.
Oh, wait. It goes on. And this is part three. Here's part three, and then I'm done. Finally, Governor Corbett's administration is now soliciting bids from private companies to run the Pennsylvania lottery.
It's the trifecta.
I don't have to say anything. I'm done. But it makes me want to throw up, like Rick Santorum said about John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Corbett requests private sector proposals to run the lottery because that won't bring any corruption.
Well, and now you've just put your arms between the denial of health care to a sick child.
Yep.
The denial of voting.
Oh, and he does tax cuts to businesses all over the place. I mean, this is his thing. You know, of course.
But once you've wrapped your arms around that, you come up with this right-wing Christian prosperity.
I'm sorry. I need to stop for just a minute and have a drink because I'm really sick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Take a breath,
yep.
Darling.
He's what two.
I know, honey. I know.
Okay.
I know.
I always do this, and I promise I won't. And
well,
it just makes me want to throw up.
You get let me put it this way. My wife gets very emotional about these things. I get very angry. She gets angry too. But after this podcast is done, she will do more in a given day for the cause than I will.
That's true. Well, and part of the reason I get so emotional is the paperwork thing. Where she didn't get the forms, because I deal with that fucking bureaucracy every month, and I have it on my calendar because my kids get $600 worth of meds a month so they can go to school.
Yeah.
And I negotiate and I make sure I'm on it every month. It's like, they got to get their meds. I got to have the paperwork. I got to fill out. I've talked about this on the podcast before where I've got to get the paper prescription and pick it up at the doctor's office, drive across town to the pharmacy, make sure the pharmacy has the meds, get it, and it's like this humongous weight drops off my shoulders when I've got those three bottles of pills. Then I know I'm set for another 28 to 30 days.
Uh-huh.
When this mom whose 2-year-old has a pacemaker doesn't get the fucking form in the mail and goes to the pediatrician to have her baby's pacemaker looked at and finds out she doesn't have insurance because the governor gave tax cuts to businesses and went and privatized the fucking lottery. That's when I want violence. You know, I get really scared at how I'm behaving and where my thoughts are going.
Uh-huh.
Because
I know
I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be an assassin. I don't want to be somebody who wants to overthrow things, but I want this overthrown electorally.
Yeah.
I want it done. I want him out. I don't want these kind of people running my country. And I'm not waving a birth certificate in a Ziploc bag around my neck saying I want my country back.
No,
I want,
you're waving,
I want this little 2-year old to be cared for with my tax dollars.
You're waving,
I want a society where that
the Bill
matters.
Of Rights,
yeah,
and
yeah.
the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Yep. Yep.
And all of those good Enlightenment values at people and saying, can't we all at least agree that this is a good thing?
That we don't turn people away at the emergency room when they've been in a car accident because they don't have insurance? Yeah.
That the Dark Ages was a bad idea?
Yeah.
Can we all sort of get behind that notion? The answer is no.
Nope.
No, we can't, because they have been trained like dogs that liberals are bad. Socialism is bad, and it is a zombie army. You can reason with them, talk to them, throw facts at them, chart them, lay this shit out for them all the live long day, and they'll just look at you with those glazed, randite eyes and say, "That you ain't an American. You're a liberal. Why should I listen to you?" And I don't, you know, I know they're as dumb as a bag of hammers, and they will always vote against their economic interests, and they're going to drag the rest of us down with them. I know all that. And because that's just who they are. They're just fucking hillbillies.
Yeah.
And that's who they are, and that's who they always will be. I don't fault them for not exceeding their design specifications. I fault the people in the media who keep giving them credibility and who keep robbing their critics of their ability to criticize them by saying, well, you know, both sides are always equally wrong about
everything. Yeah.
Because it reduces the center to the cynical, lazy, barca lounger on the ass bunch of American Idol watchers.
Or even just let us know that Rick Perry is on meds.
Air. Because
the reason he acted so crazy at that debate is because he's drugged. Oh, okay. Now we have that information. That's good to know.
And I hesitate to use a Star Trek reference, because, you know, why begin and end our podcast with a science fiction reference? But there's this lovely little exchange from Star Trek: The Next Generation, where the Federation has been at war with the Cardassians, not the Kardashians, the Cardassians. My mistake. One is a popular program involving slutty women, and one is a character in the Star Trek, but. Chief O'Brien, our chief engineer, who's Scotty, essentially, or Geordi LaForge, they always have a chief engineer, had been in war with these guys, had been in battle and had done terrible things. And the whole episode is about him coming to terms with the fact this is now our allies. And he really gives one of the Kardashians on board a hard time. At the end of the show, he said, "Look, Kardashian, I don't hate you. I hate what you made me become. I hate what I had to turn into to fight you. And I don't hate these fucking hillbillies. I hate David Gregory because he knows better, because he's doing it for money. I hate what they are forcing us to do to try to stop the disaster that they have unleashed on this country. I don't like being the angry Irish guy who yells, can't you fucking people just get behind the Enlightenment? Can we all agree on that? I don't like being that guy. I never wanted to be that guy. I would gladly go back to being a calm, middle-class, bourgeois worker bee who votes in elections and pays attention to politics and occasionally voices my opinion here and there. But that doesn't work. And I see us careening over a cliff because these people are dragging us over a cliff, and they won't fucking stop, no matter what you do. They will not stop. And I look just behind them and I see crackpot right-wing billionaires and corporations funding them to destroy my country. And I keep looking around. I see good liberals, good progressives, even a couple of good centrists standing up to them and trying to stop them. But I see behind the billionaires and behind the hillbillies, I see David Gregory counting his money, smiling and saying, fuck it. If the whole thing burns, my kid will still be in a private school and I'll find
I'll be
a private
at the country club. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's just a game. It's just a game. No, when you live in the Beltway bubble and you're protected by money on all sides, then it's a game.
Yeah.
But to the rest of us who live in the real world with our noses in the dirt, It's not a game.
Well, but it is a game. You know, when Sarah Palin can appear on the Today Show and be, and I actually defended that. That wow, she's actually qualified. She's that vapid that
yeah.
she can. She's actually qualified to do that morning talk show routine. That's
yep.
fine. I love. I found a wonderful quote from Rachel Maddow, and that this will cheer me up because quoting Rachel Maddow always cheers me up. From April of 2009, where she said. Sarah Palin is now the guy who hangs out in the high school parking lot showing off his car 5 years after he graduated.
Yeah, she
you know,
sure the hell.
She doesn't have a single accomplishment to point to.
No.
And I don't know if you saw this, but Bristol, I don't want to get all gossipy here, but this is hilarious. Bristol Palin is shacking up with her boyfriend, but she's not calling it that. They're calling it a trial marriage.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm gonna get my a nice leather-bound copy of The Crucible, and I'll send it to them.
As a trial marriage wedding gift?
As a trial marriage wedding. You know, Arthur Miller is the appropriate gift for your first hillbilly trial marriage.
There you go.
Way to go. Way to go.
And we don't even have time to get into the fact that Rupert Murdoch's son resigned in disgrace from Sky B for wiretapping.
Yeah.
In other news.
In other news, Rupert Murdoch's one asshole.
Back to you, Driftglass.
Yeah. Yeah. And here I really kind of feel like we're parked 5 miles off the boundary waters of the United States.
Yeah.
Just piping our little pirate broadcast.
Honestly.
Because it's just so
honestly, we're so outsiderish, and it's. But listen, I feel like an insider when we get a $5 contribution. How's that for a segue?
Yeah.
And you got some contributions this week on your fundraiser. Thank you, everybody, donating to our podcast and helping us out. We really appreciate your support of our podcast work. As I always say, mm-hmm. in my thank you emails, that this is a job that we do and we love, and we don't do it for the money. Believe me, but. When you send us a $5 donation, it means the world to us, and we appreciate that you do that, and those of you that send more, thank you as well. You can listen to our podcast for free anywhere at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, at our Facebook page, and I'm Frances Langham on Facebook. We're on iTunes, and we have a fabulous app available at the iTunes Store, which gives you access to both our blogs, our Twitter streams, and our bonus content from time to time. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio. And we are on Netroots Radio from 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern at netrootsradio.blogspot.com. You can contribute to the podcast at our website. We have a P.O. Box, which is P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. And Driftglass, one of the things that was in the P.O. Box this week is a renewal notice for the P.O. Box. So we've had that for a year now, and we love getting your letters. Thank you so much to all of you who've written us snail mail letters over the past year. It has enriched our lives and enriched our podcast, and we really appreciate it.
I do want to mention another thing we received in the post office box was a copy of a book.
I'm laughing because I know what you're going to say.
And I won't mention the author because he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
I'll pimp the book once I've read the book. But it's a self-published book, and I was asked for a blurb for the book.
And you read some of it. He sent you some.
He sent me some
chapters,
galleys,
right? Yeah, galleys.
And I did a blurb, and we hashed out exactly how that would work. And I got a copy of the book, and bless his heart, he sent it to me. And I'd like to report that someone named Durftglass really thinks this is a fine book, and perhaps you should read it. So,
when you work on a blurb for a book, and then he misspells the name on a self-published book of your anonymous blog.
Yeah. I'm now even more anonymous.
You're even more anonymous than you thought you were.
Hey, dude, get my fake name right, okay? But being self-published, I'm sure he will correct.
I'll fix it in the next printing. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
But it cracked. I laughed about it.
We all laughed, both of us.
It's funny.
It cracked us up. It really did. But
it made my day.
It's one of those things. Speaking as someone who fixes Driftglass's typos on a regular basis, yes. we are not turning into hypocrites on that score, are we?
No. But I will say this. I will be a lot more picky. And fine-tooth comb-ish when I do a book than when I do an average blog post. I will say that.
Okay. And you will make sure that anyone who writes a blurb for your as yet unwritten, unpublished book that you spell the name of their blog right.
We always get a delightful surprise in our P.O. box.
And we're very grateful to you.
We really are.
Every week, we put a new internet kitty on our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. And this week, the internet kitty of the week is Tubby Cat. Tubby Cat is a big black cat with big yellow eyes and is beautiful. And we thank you for sending the picture of Tubby Cat. And Tubby Cat will be gracing our Facebook page and our blog this week. Again, we love hearing from you. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Be aware that if you write us at that address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, the Internet Kitties can't wait for the debut of their new show on Current TV.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Drift Class Blue Gal Podcast. Burn that bridge!
Yeah.
Take that, Al Gore!
Yeah. Well, from what I hear, I get these rumors on the internet.
Yeah.
And I hear that Current TV not going so well.
Oh, well.
The problems with their business plan have to do with their carriage agreement.
Well, their, you know, that Nobel Peace Prize money can't last forever.
Yeah, no, no.
So.
No. Maybe Stephen Colbert could loan him some of that Peabody
there
money.
There you go. That massive Peabody money.
Here. I can just see Colbert stroking a cat sitting in his back room. So you come to me on the day of my Peabody Award. You ask for me this favor, Al Gore.